Thanks again for tuning into the Old Langford History Podcast. I hope you've been enjoying the episodes to date, as there's much more to come. We've got years of stories to cover. I'm Sue Harper, your host. Are you ready for our first murder mystery? Our episode today is, Who Has Lost a Friend? Or what was reported in the local newspaper, The Langford Lake Mystery. It all started back in 1869. A strange mystery emerged around the discovery of a human skeleton found about a half mile beyond Langford Lake in the direction of the Goldstream Inn, which stood at the entrance of what is now Goldstream Provincial Campground. This cold-blooded murder quickly became known as the Langford Lake Mystery, as a local newspaper attempted to grip locals with its horrific graphic descriptions, witness details, speculation, along with multiple arrests. The discovery of the human remains prompted the British colonists to ask, "Who has lost a friend?" as it took a while to discover the name of the victim. This is just one example of the many records of mysterious murders that occurred in the young colony during this time. It shows the wild and brutal nature that seethed just below the surface in this era of Langford's early history. It also shows the indifference that the time most held of the death of a local, shall we say a nobody, rather than someone of higher standing. It also is indicative of the lackluster performance of the police and others as they blundered along in what could barely be considered an investigation. The resources available to the colonial police to solve crimes, especially of this nature, was sparse in the 1860s, to say the least. Their skills and forensic capabilities were nothing compared to the police departments, detectives, and medical examiners that we have today. It was a hot mid-August afternoon in 1869 when two hunters made a gruesome discovery in a shallow pool beside the Goldstream Road. Neither man seemed alarmed by the discovery and just noted that the skeleton was human and was in several inches of water. The two men just continued on their hunt as they didn't want their discovery to interfere with their day. I guess that some people even today have that don't get involved weird attitude. But come on, if you find a body, where's your moral integrity? It wasn't until the next day that one of the hunters, only noted as being Mr. Porter, sent his son out to the scene with a shovel. Can you imagine that? The son's age was unknown. The young Porter eventually returned home. He said that he dug up part of the skeleton and poked around in the pool where the body was and uncovered several more bones that were very decayed. He also saw some bones with no flesh on them. In particular, he said, the face was, quote, quite gone. The elder Porter notified a couple of his neighbors of the find, but it seems they were all way too busy harvesting to actually notify the police. So the body lay there for several more weeks. Finally, Porter and some neighbors went back to the spot on a Sunday to find the pool where the body was. The pool had dried up, and it looked like wolves or hogs had scattered the bones, as they said, far and near. It wasn't until early September news of the find actually got to the newspaper and the police. On September 8th, the British colonists reported, "There were no shreds of clothing or hair to be found anywhere, nothing in fact to furnish the faintest clue to the identification of the remains, and the bones were finally collected and buried. Whether the remains are those of some poor, demented wretch who strayed away from his keepers and perished miserably from starvation, whether they are those of a self-immolated victim, or whether they constitute the evidence of a murder most foul, may never be known." The casual nature towards finding the body up to this point sounds pretty amazing and shows it could have been a fairly common occurrence around the wilderness of Langford. As news slowly spread, several settlers in the Langford Goldstream area came forward and recalled that in the spring, a man had come by looking for his missing friend, who he said had set out to Victoria from Leechtown, a gold mining area west of Langford Lake, but he'd never shown up. On September 11th, 3 weeks after the initial discovery of the body and a day after it was reported in the newspaper, Magistrate Pemberton, also acting as a coroner, and Dr. Helmkin went to the spot and returned to Victoria with some exhumed remains. The quick and cursory examination of the bones only revealed that the dead man had been a white man, but nothing more. It was Officer Bob McMillan of the Colonial Police that uncovered the sinister demise of the unknown man, as reported under the heading Horrible Affair in the British Colonist. Police Officer McMillan returned late in the evening, bringing with him a vest, a pair of drawers, and a few other articles of clothing, which he found secreted beneath a log near where the skeleton was found. The vest had 4 holes, evidently made by bullets, 2 through the breast and 2 through the back. The vest is recognized as the property of a Nova Scotia man named Captain Joseph Baker. Nothing more Baker is known, not even his age, except that he was a miner in the Leechtown area. Leechtown had been established after payable gold had been found in 1864. It was thought by a couple of the men that knew him that he had left the Leech River a year previously in 1868. Baker was last seen on the Goldstream Road walking towards Victoria. It was reported that he had been carrying $50 in gold dust. It was noted that the fullest investigation will be held into the circumstances attending this horrible affair. On September 12, 1869, the British Colonist editorialized this event and the alarming number of violent deaths that had been happening in recent years. The editorial read, "The finding of the hideous evidence of murder and deliberate cold-blooded slaughter of an unarmed and unsuspicious traveler by someone who laid in wait for at the edge of a lonely wood and shot down from behind by a stealthy assassin adds another page to the long and fearful record of mysterious assassinations that have occurred in this colony during the past 11 years and of the perpetrators to which no clue has ever been obtained. In the case under consideration, there is not the slightest room of doubt that the remains are those of Captain Baker. His vest identified by a man who had lived in the same cabin for 1 year. He was last seen alive on the Goldstream Road, about 1.5 miles nearer Goldstream than the spot where the skeleton was found. Patrick Fowler, keeper of the Goldstream house and a hunter known as Butch, were out clearing the road of a fallen timber one afternoon early last January. When he parted company with them, Baker said he would stop and rest at the Browns Parsonbridge house. He never showed and was never again seen alive by mortal men, save his murderer. His non-appearance in town occasioned remark, but in a new country where a man's movements are erratic and uncertain, it was taken for granted that in a fit of the blues, he had shipped on board some vessel and gone away. In addition to the bullet-riddled vest, a pair of drawers, a gray shirt, and an undershirt were found beneath the fallen tree, 25 yards from the place the skeleton was discovered. The skeleton itself lay 50 yards from the road. The hat, coat, boots, and pants were gone. The opinion of the police is that the man was shot on the road, the body dragged into a deep thicket, stripped of its clothing, thrown into the swamp, and left to the animals and decay. The problem remaining to be solved is, who did this deed? The stripping of the body would lead us to naturally to suppose that the Indians were the perpetrators, but a white man might easily seek to divert suspicion towards natives to screen himself. Things went quiet about the murder until suddenly 2 months later, on November 9th, an inspector by the name of Bowden and McMillan arrested Patrick Fowler, innkeeper of the Goldstream house, and charged him with the murder. Fowler had recently sold the Goldstream house and had been preparing to leave the colony aboard the steamer Wilson G. Hunt. Before the chief magistrate, Officer McMillan, on November 10th, put together the details of what the police thought had happened. The story went that Captain Baker had left the Leech River around December 14, 1868, heading for Victoria. The miner had stopped at the Goldstream House, which many travelers did. The next morning, Baker, accompanied by Fowler and a third man known at the time as Butch, started towards Victoria. At about a mile and a half, they parted company as Fowler and Butch returned to the hotel. Then on August 19, 1869, the remains of a human were found in a small pool on the Langford Plains, about a half mile from where Fowler and Butch had last seen him. McMillan concluded, quote, "From information I have received, I have reason to believe and do believe that the said Patrick Fowler was concerned in the willful murder of the said Joseph Baker, and I charge him accordingly." The police believed that Fowler was fleeing his crime of murder. Fowler's counsel immediately objected, saying that he was not fleeing from justice, but had property on the American side, and his family resided in Washington Territory, so that he had every right to leave town. The court, however, agreed with McMillan and remanded him. Quote, "The magistrate said in the case was one which demanded the strictest investigation. The prisoner was the last person who saw the deceased alive, and the officer did precisely what he ought to have done in laying the information." At a second hearing, different versions of events emerged, which made it very murky. Settler Arthur Peet Sr. testified that Fowler had told him that he and Butch had actually separated soon after Baker had left, and that Fowler had said that he'd heard the crack of a rifle. In a second version of the story, Henry Kibblewaite testified that Fowler had said that Butch and Baker had headed off towards Victoria together, and Fowler had heard a gunshot. And then a third version from a Lee Harnett stated that Fowler said Baker had left towards town and Butch had left in the same direction a little later. Harnett also mentioned that Fowler had been drinking when he told him the story and that the innkeeper was a kind and hospitable man. And lo and behold, a fourth version of events from a man by the name of R.J. McDonald, who stated that Fowler had told him that Butch was helping him cut a tree when Baker had passed by. All these different versions of events resulted in Fowler being held for trial for the murder of Joseph Baker. The police thought they'd got their man. Then, on January 5, 1870, a new development occurred. Leonard Steele, the man known as Butch, turned up out of the blue. He had been out of Victoria and returned aboard the steamer Olympia. In a bar on Johnson Street in Victoria, the bartender had told him of Baker's murder and that he was, quote, "the object of affectionate inquiry on the part of the police and was under a suspicion for being Fowler's accomplice." He immediately went to the police and was promptly arrested. The next day, Butch appeared before Magistrate Pemberton. His statement was read to the court. As reported, Fowler, Baker, and Butch walked along the Goldstream Road to a point where a tree lay across the road. Fowler and Butch stopped to cut it, and Baker went towards Victoria. Butch, the prisoner, said he heard no shot fired while chopping and that no person passed along the road to his knowledge that day. Officers pointed out the inconsistencies between Butch and Fowler's. Quote, "Fowler says that a number of Indians passed along the road shortly after Baker had gone on, and soon afterwards heard a shot fired." Butch made several more court appearances, and on January 22nd was released on his own recognizance, or as the paper put it, liberated, to appear again in 1 month. Fowler, however, was kept in jail to await his trial. But then yet another twist occurred. A month later, on February 18, 1870, Fowler was also suddenly released. The paper stated that Fowler was now only accused of knowing more than he was willing to tell of the murder of Baker at Langford Lake. This certainly sounded as if the case against Fowler was falling apart due to lack of evidence. But it took another 3 months, on May 5th, that Attorney General suddenly dropped all charges against Fowler and for him to be discharged. Butch was also discharged of his recognizance. They were both free men. Now with no leads and the murder growing increasingly stale, in July 1870, Pemberton offered a reward. A reward of $500 is hereby offered for such information as will lead to the apprehension and conviction of any person or persons concerned in the said crime. Then, on November 22nd, out of the blue, a man by the name of Thomas G. Smith was charged in Baker's murder. But if there was a lack of evidence to convict Fowler, it was ridiculously non-existent against Smith. Smith had been arrested after patrons of the identical saloon on Wharf Street had spun a story saying Smith had been with Baker on that fateful day and carried a pistol while Baker was unarmed, despite carrying several $20 gold pieces and silver. The information was also confirmed by the night watchman of the jail. In court, Smith declared that the evidence was false and he could actually prove that he wasn't even on Vancouver Island at the time of the murder. The court remanded the prisoner for 1 week, assuring him that he should have every opportunity afforded him to procure evidence. A week later, he made a second appearance in court with witnesses, testifying and confirming his location as nowhere near where Baker was killed. Despite that, the court remanded him twice more before he too was finally released with no charges laid. That was the end of the botched investigation into the murder of Joseph Baker. No others were arrested, no further evidence uncovered, no more gossip or far-fetched tips followed up on. Whoever murdered Joseph Baker on the Langford Plains on his way to Victoria was never discovered. What became of Baker's remains, where they're buried, or even if his family was ever contacted and told of his murder, is unknown. There also seems to be no record of his death at the BC Archives. It's as if Joseph Baker never existed. The Langford Lake mystery slipped from the headlines and into history. Thanks for listening to episode 6 of the Old Langford History Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the first unsolved murder mystery and will join me again to listen to future episodes. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page, where you'll find lots of photos and information on other events in Langford's past. This is Sue Harper, signing off until next time.